Well, I told you last week about a game that we played before service. Today, we're all going to play a game, and it's called What Did Nate Google? What did Nate Google? I'm going to give you the answers from the search page that showed up when I Googled this question, and you're going to try to figure out what it is that I Googled. Here are some of the articles that came up. 13 happy things you need for a perfectly happy life. 9 things you can do in the next 30 minutes to be happy. One of those might be not listen to the sermon. 10 simple things you can do today that will make you happy. Or maybe 6 simple things you can do every day that will make you happy. Maybe simple's not your way, so 20 hard things you need to do to be happy. What about 30 things you just need to let go of to be happy? Neuroscience discovers 5 things that will make you happy, even though there were 6 in the article. I read it. Or the one thing you need to know to be happy, which I'm sure you're dying to know, and it was pursue a goal bigger than yourself, which is admirable but maybe nebulous. And lastly, a YouTube video titled, The One Thing That Will Make You Hot, Smart, and Happy. Wow, that sounded great, so I watched it, of course, and it said I needed to learn, be a good learner, and so I put that into practice, which is why I appear hotter and smarter and happier to you today. So those are just the articles that popped up on the first page of my search results. What would you imagine I was trying to find out? How can we be happy, right? What one thing do we need to be happy? What if I asked you that question? What if we went like one by one today all the way around and just said, what is it that you need? I'm not going to do that. Don't worry. All of you introverts, just settle down, simmer. We're not going to do this, okay? But if I did, if I said, what one thing would you need to be happy? Would it be maybe as simple as a place to live? Maybe you love the country and you think, man, if I could just live out in the country where no one would bother me, have my place paid off, and that'd be sweet. I could probably be happy. A certain sized bank account or lifestyle. Maybe it's just people. You need certain people. If these certain people were in my life, I think that would allow me to be happy. Maybe it's a certain discipline or practice. If I could do this thing, then I'd probably be happy. Maybe it's if I could lose a certain amount of weight or gain a certain amount of weight every January. That's everybody's goal. I mean, what would it be? What would it that would make you happy? I'll quote my favorite theologian that I quote so often, but there's a song by Rich Mullins called One Thing. And the beginning of the song says this: everybody I know says they need just one thing. What they really mean is they need just one thing more. I think he's on to something. Everybody I know says they need just one thing, but what they really mean is they need just one thing more. Do you find that to be true as you look around you? What about as you look inside of you? That's a more difficult question. I think Rich is saying basically, when people say, I need this thing to be happy, whatever it is, what they really mean is, I need this thing plus all the stuff I already have, and then I'll be happy. It's not just that thing that will make them happy. It's that thing plus everything else. And likely there will come a day when that becomes not enough, and then there'll be just one more thing, and the cycle will continue for our whole life. I think Psalm 27 this morning is going to be a call to a deeper way of living. And a direct answer, I think, to the question of what one thing do you need? What one thing do I need? As every week, especially last week, we said it again, but there's so much in each of these psalms. And so we could likely, in Psalm 27, spend the whole day on the first 2 verses or the whole day on the last 2 verses or anywhere in between there. The focus is actually going to be primarily in verse 4 because I think it will give us context for the whole chapter. But I want to read it to you because I think ultimately it gives us this picture of what it is that we need. And so I'm going to read it and I'll ask you once again, as we've done once and heard it or read it in video, to listen this time to the 27th chapter of the book of Psalms. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked advance against me to devour me, it is my enemies and my foes who will stumble and fall. Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident. One thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. For in the day of trouble, he will keep me safe in his dwelling. He will hide me in the shelter of his sacred tent and set me high upon a rock. Then my head will be exalted above the enemies who surround me. At his sacred tent, I will sacrifice with shouts of joy. I will sing and make music to the Lord. Hear my voice when I call, Lord. Be merciful to me and answer me. My heart says of you, seek his face. Your face, Lord, I will seek. Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my helper. Do not reject me or forsake me, God, my Savior. Though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will receive me. Teach me your way, Lord. Lead me in a straight path because of my oppressors. Do not turn me over to the desires of my foes, for false witnesses rise up against me, spouting malicious accusations. I remain confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. I've heard it said, and I read it a few places in the course of studying for all these various sermon series and psalms. I can't really tell you for sure where I read it now that I'm thinking back, but there's been a few people that have said it seems when you read the book of Psalms more like the psalms are reading you than that you are reading them. And this is definitely one in which I find that to be true for me, in which somehow the book is able to read the conditions or the thoughts or the things that we believe and think deeply in our heart. And I think it starts to get to the root of the question we started with. What is it that we need? What is it that truly drives us? What is it that we're living for? Not at some surface level, but if you could pull back all of the false identities and insecurities and pride and busyness and all that goes on in your life, what is truly at the core of your being? Verse 4 then asks the question that I think we need to be asking, or at least it answers it. It's David's answer in verse 4. One thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. Basically, I think David is saying the one thing he wants in life is to be in the presence of God and to let everything else be either an outcome of that or drift to the side. His focus is to be in the presence of God. That is the one thing. I'm not going to give you a whole bunch of thoughts this morning. That's going to be the one thing. To stay focused on one thing, we must become devoted to the task of seeking to will only one thing. It's a philosophical term from Soren Kierkegaard, which some of you probably love if you've taken philosophy class, or maybe you hate if you've taken philosophy class. But he came up with this phrase, or at least wrote something on it, called, it said this, purity of heart is to will one thing. Purity of heart is to will one thing. So when Jesus says, the pure in heart shall see God, what does it mean to be pure in heart? He said it's pure in heart when you are able to will one thing. Of course, by that he means what David is saying, that the one thing I will is to seek and to know and to be with God. Kierkegaard's focus, I think, was to get us to center in on the will of God and to let it be the one thing that was at the center of our being. Maybe that's really kind of like pie in the sky. What do you mean? What are you talking about? Wills, philosophers, blah, 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 Nathan, right? What does it mean to have a divided nature or divided soul or divided heart? I don't even know what you mean to will one thing. Let me give you a really cheesy example of a heart divided that pursues different things or has different thoughts. It's a story my wife has told me multiple times, and I'm going to use it as an illustration this morning. When she was in high school, and I have her permission, so don't think I didn't ask about that. When she was in high school, she was dating a guy. And the way this story starts off, you're probably already going to figure out maybe this wasn't a great guy to date, which she also came to that conclusion pretty fast. But so the story starts with, it was her birthday, and he was going to take her out to eat. That's nice. Or something like that. And so the story starts with him saying to her, I think you should come pick me up in your car because I don't want to pay for gas. And so she did. She drove her car to his house, picked him up, and he got in the car, and then he gave her a present. That's nice. And it's one of those, at least I remember this, when we used to buy CDs a lot instead of just like MP3s and stuff. And it was obviously a CD, like it was wrapped, but it's there's only certain things that are that size, right? So she sees it, he gives it to her, and then he says this, "I don't know if you like him," assuming that's what's in the wrapping paper, "but if you don't, I'll take it back. I like him." And I'd laugh all the time because it was like, here's a present. I hope you don't want it because I actually do. You know, I don't really want to give this to you. And I just, that story kills me every time I hear it. And I'm like, I think that should have been the end of the date. Like, I'll take your CD. And actually, this you if you know my wife, you know she kept the CD even though she didn't like the guy in the, she didn't like the CD. It's like, no way, dude, you're not getting that back. It was Michael W. Smith, in case you're curious. Okay, so really easily, though, you can see in that moment there is a divided purpose in that guy's heart, right? There is the part of him that goes, even if it's just obligation, I need to give this girlfriend a present. There's something in him that's going, maybe it's the right thing, maybe it's his mom telling him he has to, I don't know. But something is saying, I need to do this. There's a motivation there, right? There's also this motivation that goes, I want this CD, I kind of don't want to have to pay for gas, I want my way. Like, there's that whole side too, right? Both of those things are at play in the story. It's pretty easy to see in something as simple as that, but that happens all the time in us, where there are competing desires in our soul, and some of them are a lot more serious than just a present in high school from a boy you should have never dated, right? Maybe they deal with our families or our marriages or our money or our relationships or our time or why we are so afraid or so many other areas of life. Psalm 27, David is saying, I center myself, I focus myself on one thing. And it provides for him all of the benefits that we see then in the rest of the psalm. It provides for him so many other things. The rest of what he says in Psalms 27, I think, is true because of verse 4. It's true because he is seeking and desiring above all else to be in the presence of God. A lot of things flow from that. You see him say in verse 1, for instance, the Lord is my light and my salvation. The Lord is the stronghold of my life. I think those are things David is experiencing because he is seeking above all else to be in the presence of God. Maybe we just look at those three. He lists more and we'll just mention them, but he calls God his light, his salvation, and his stronghold. First, he calls him God is his light. The thing that overcomes darkness, the thing that brings sight when we can't see, provides vision where otherwise there would be none, gives clarity. Does anybody love, we're coming up on Halloween, gotta be honest, anybody love the dark? Like, do you love being in the, walking out in the, like, what I want to do is walk out in the woods when it's pitch black, Nate. Not with the clown thing going on right now. And not at all. I used to think that I did, right? Like, I used to think I'm a tough guy. Like, I'm going to go out in the woods in the dark. Me a man, right? Like, I used to kind of think that. I don't think that anymore. I hate being in the dark, especially, flashlights are my best friend. I remember when I was a youth pastor, wonderful, I didn't mean to mention that the Turners were here, but the Turners are here, and they were at my church in South Dakota when I was there before here. And the first year I was there as a youth pastor, I worked at Cedar Canyon Camp for youth camp, and all the new guys always ended up having to work security. So a couple nights in a row, I'd work security. Well, it's a large campground, and teenagers that sneak out after curfew don't like to stay in the light because then they'll be found. So they're always in the dark places hiding, right? And so as the security guy, I'm having to walk around this giant campground, and at that point, I just had this little dinky flashlight, and I'm expecting, you know, Chupacabra or someone to come out and eat me, and the next morning no one's gonna know where I am, right? Like, Pastor Nate was here last night, now he's gone. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I don't, you can make fun of me later or right now. I don't like being in the dark by myself. So the next day I'm back at work, and the senior pastor who's still there at the church says, oh, I got something for you. He used to work at camp too, and he was a youth pastor. I got this flashlight. I'm like, oh, whatever. It's a flash. I got a flashlight, dude. But he brings it to me, and I think it was 10 million candle watts or something. Like, wow. I turned this thing on that night and it was like, hello. Like I can see everything, right? Like I can shine it across the campground and see kids. Like I wasn't scared of the dark anymore. Like no one could sneak up on me all of a sudden because it was a flashlight. If you ever want a really cool present for anyone in your life, get a ridiculous flashlight because it's just fun. Okay, I tell you all that to say this verse, right? God is my light. I don't think he's my little dinky flashlight, okay, in the midst of a dark time in my life. I think he's more like that ridiculous flashlight that guy gave me where all of a sudden the darkness is dispelled because it has been turned on. David says God is a light like that because I've sought him. I don't think that David, you know, I went to church to talk to this guy and said, I'm scared of the dark. I need a flashlight. You know, David didn't go, I need light, God. I think he sought God and he found light for the situations in front of him, clarity for the things he was facing. He says God is his salvation. We see that word and we immediately think of Jesus. We think of his saving act on the cross, that his life, death, and resurrection have provided salvation for us. This is true. I don't think this is primarily what David means in this moment. I think he's speaking more of the everyday things in life. God is the one who delivers him, not just in an eternal sense, but today, from the things and the situations he is facing. David is king at this point. Lots of stuff is going on. You see some of that as we read the psalm. He outlines a lot of those situations throughout the psalms, and he's saying day by day, regularly, God, you are my salvation. You are the one who saves me. He's his stronghold, a place of refuge, a place of defense, a place of safety. I told them this morning at the college kids, and I put a picture up here for you, but as soon as I see stronghold, I think of this thing, which some of you will recognize if you see it, the movie. I can't not think of that place when I think of stronghold. It just comes to my mind. If you're not a Lord of the Rings fan, this is Helm's Deep from Lord of the Rings. And I think of this place because you're surrounded in the back by what, huge cliffs. You have tunneled in where you can't get to this sort of place of safety. You're surrounded by these walls, layers upon layers of protection. It just comes to my mind when I think of stronghold. David says, that's what God is like for me. He's a place I go to be safe, to be secure, to be free of worry or fear. Why should I be afraid? David says. God has these things, I think, to David because of verse 4. Because David has made his singular goal to seek God. He isn't seeking light. He isn't seeking salvation from his problems. He isn't seeking a stronghold. He is seeking God, and he has found these things because of it. We often maybe don't do it in that order, do we? I think often we look for a way out of a situation, or we go to God because we need wisdom, or we go to God because we need delivered, or we go to God because we need a place of refuge. And he is all those things. But I think what he wants from us more than that is that we would seek him and his presence. And I think in that process, we find these things about him to be true. David has found these things to be true of God because he has first set out with all his heart to seek God as his one thing. And he has pursued God with a singular focus. So when he comes to these dark times, he finds that God is his light. When he sees hopeless situations, God is his salvation. When life seems to be battering him, God is his stronghold. And I love that it's personal. This is not some, there are plenty of places in the Bible that are very much corporate that speak to us as the people of God. This is David saying, I only seek God. I want him to be the one thing. And I have found that he is not a stronghold, which he is, or even our stronghold, which he is, but he is my light and my salvation and my stronghold. It's so personal. All of the things that David says flow from a person whose heart is undivided and who finds a home for God in his heart. One thing I seek, God. I do have lots of other things in my life. He outlines them. He talks about enemies. He talks about paths. He talks about accusations. He talks about struggles. But what I want, God, is my heart, my loyalty, to be undivided. So the thing I seek the most is to be in your presence. And when I do that, he starts listing all of these wonderful blessings almost like they just happen. Now, they don't just happen. They develop and they grow. But he says things like, I find, like we said, light and salvation and shelter. But he also says things like freedom from fear and confidence and joy and singing and wisdom and goodness as you go through Psalm 27. I'm not trying this morning to give you much more than that. Sometimes there's multiple points. This is simply it. What's the question of Psalm 27? Can you say with David in Psalm 4, One thing I want, God, to be with you. You're my one thing. Can you say that? Can your heart say that? If you can peel back the layers of things we hide behind, is it true for you? When Kierkegaard wrote that statement and that book, he talked about ways in which our heart is often divided, where there are competing desires, why it is that we might get distracted from keeping God at the core and the center. He lists things like this, the lure of the reward, meaning we only seek God for what he can give us, which is not truly seeking God, right? It is only seeking what he can do or what he can give. It is a divided heart. It's the one that says, I want you, God, but I actually want what you can do for me. Or he says things like fear of punishment. Sometimes we seek God simply because we're afraid of being reprimanded or of doing wrong. Or he says busyness. Busyness distracts us. Our hearts are unable to find the peace they need so we can actually understand them. Indifference. Maybe we're just sort of blah, blah about it. Yeah, I heard Pastor Nate say that, or I read that in my Bible, and that sounds like a good idea, but I'm not really going to commit myself to it. I'm not into the hard work that it takes. He lists things like comparison. We're pretty good at this one. We look at others and go, you know, I'm a little further along in my relationship with God than they are. I'm closer with God than they are. I've walked longer with God than they have. And our will becomes divided by pride, and we start to value our position or our rank instead of purely simply seeking the presence of God. Is your heart undivided? Or are there divisions? Can you say with David, this one thing I seek? That song I quoted you at the beginning continues this way. Save me from those things that might distract me. Please take them away and purify my heart. You're my one thing, and the pure in heart shall see God. I think that's the cry of Psalm 27. God, let us be people that seek you first, not for what you can do, not for what you have done or will do, but because of who you are. Let us desire to be in your presence and our hearts to be transformed by it. Let's pray. God, this is really just a one-point sermon. I think that's okay, because it's a tough question. Will you allow us clarity? Maybe for us that means we finally get out that giant spotlight and just let you shine it on our soul. And as we ask those questions of what really, if I could just be real honest, what is it that's in my heart and my soul that is competing sort of for allegiance, that is competing for what it is that gives me purpose or drives my life? Can I just be really honest about what's in there with you? And would you allow me by your grace, each of us, somehow to move closer and closer to this verse 4 that says, God, the only thing I deeply want in my life is to be in your presence, to be transformed by your power, to live for your kingdom. That my whole life would be about that. And then all these wonderful things that we like and love and deliverance and safety and stronghold and all this stuff comes by being in your presence. And we stop just seeking you for what you can give us, but we seek you because of who you are. Will you help that to be a reality for all of us today? And as we read this psalm and as its words sort of just cascade over our soul, would they transform us? Would they do work, if you want to call it that, on our heart so that we might come more and more to look like this? Thank you for David and his raw honesty and the way he speaks to our own hearts. We ask this week you'd help us to live in all things for you. We ask in Christ's name this morning. Amen.